Hello, everybody. I'm Karen Hartglass, and it's October 28th, 2014, and you're listening to It's All About Food. How are you doing today? So last week I mentioned I was in the San Francisco Bay Area, and I'm still here. And it's so nice to be in this sunny place, shiny, sunny place. And I wanted to mention that I did go to the plant-based pizza restaurant in San Jose, and I want to let you know it was amazing. It's just a little funky place, but they have so much variety, and everything is vegan, and they have gluten-free as well as vegan, lots of different choices. And you know what I love the best? Of course, the food I loved, but what I loved the best was the service. There were these young kids that were working in the place, and they were so polite. I understood everything they said. They enunciated, and they were filled with so much joy. I'm not used to that. You know, you go into so many different stores and fast food establishments, and unfortunately, the service is not very good. And I wonder, is it related to the food? Can food make you feel better? Can it fill you with energy? Can it fill you with a feeling of joy and life that you want to share with other people? I think so, and I think that's what I was feeling over there. And I can't wait to go back. I'm going to try it one more time. I'm not a pizza person. Most of the time, I prefer eating whole, fresh, plant-based foods. I love my kale and my salads, things like that. But, you know, occasionally it's really fun to have pizza. And why not have it when it's cruelty-free and made from really simple ingredients that are plant-based? Cool. Okay, let's move on to the main part of the program, shall we? I want to bring on my first guest. I'm really looking forward to this. Jan Grandma Golden, and she's the author of a new children's book, Bird Lady Meets Mort and Ort, in It's a Great Day for Pulling Weeds. And you're going to find out she's a passionate environmentalist who maintains a garden that is not only a certified National Wildlife Federation habitat, but also an Audubon Bird and Butterfly Sanctuary. Jan, welcome to It's All About Food.
Karen, I'm glad to be here with you.
Hi, how are you today?
I'm great, but I bet you're warmer weather than we're having right here.
Where are you?
Illinois.
Oh,
chilly today.
My goodness.
Yes, you said you're in San Francisco Bay Area.
Yeah. Well, the weather is a fascinating thing to me, and I really hope that we're not wreaking too much havoc with our climate, but we know we are.
Yeah. Absolutely. I agree.
Yeah. Now, a few weeks ago, I was talking with some scientists from the Xerces Society out in Oregon, I think. And we talked a lot about native plants and beneficial insects. And we talked about the science behind it. And I think the conclusions we came to are very similar to what's in your own little book. It's a Great Day for Pulling Weeds. And I think a little bird may have told you all that information.
It certainly did. Very colorful birds at that.
So did a little bird share this with you, or how did you really come to know all that you do about gardening and taking care of the birds and the bees and the plants?
Well, I'm an avid gardener, and I just love to be outdoors. I always have. But living in a rural area now, I've been increasingly concerned about the loss of natural habitat for our songbirds, our bees, and our butterflies. And I've actually observed the decrease in the numbers of those in our small area. And even the media is even growing more concerned in this nation and, as you know, around the world. And if we don't take action to preserve what we have left, then we're all in trouble in years to come. So I was actually inspired to write the book so the younger generation will be educated on the need to become more responsible stewards of our environment by becoming gardeners and reversing some of what my generation has done over the years in, destroying parts of it.
Well, it's amazing to me what we've done over the last 50 to 100 years in trying to become very efficient with our food production, and not even realize what the impact was. So we're spreading all these toxic chemicals around to kill the things we don't like, bugs and the weeds right. that we don't want to sell.
Right.
And we've just destroyed so much habitat. And it's incredible when you grow these beautiful native wildflowers and grasses, and they provide seeds and food for all our beautiful friends, the birds and the bees that aren't really wreaking havoc on our agricultural produce.
We certainly have been. And it's the small things that are keeping us alive and thriving, starting with the bees and the butterflies. And some people don't know it, but I do address this in my book, Educate Children and Those That Are, you know, Reading It With Them. But actually about one-third of human nutrition is due to our bee pollination, and that includes the majority of fruits and many vegetables or their feed crops. And you, being a vegan, would certainly be in trouble if that was the case.
Well, you know, we'd all be in trouble, because even those people who eat animal foods, you have to grow plants to feed those animals. And
Absolutely.
If you can't grow them, you won't be feeding the animals either, so we're all in trouble.
Absolutely. We certainly are.
Yeah, and what's fascinating, I'm just always so surprised and disappointed with so many of my fellow human beings, but those of us who do garden and garden organically, the bees are thriving there. They come and they're thriving, and yet there are so many places where they're dying and they're not thriving. It's not that hard to figure out how to bring them and how to nourish them and how to protect them and how to make them thrive.
Well, you're absolutely correct. And it's the simple fact of providing what they need. We need to grow those native plants that you mentioned, you know, to attract them to our area and give them refuge within those native plants. And then by providing water for the wildlife, you know, by a bird bath or a shallow dish or a pond in your yard. And then we also need to create some protective covers, you know, in our own yards. And that, again, will draw them and protect them, you know, build some things for them to live in, grow different plants. Like one of my lessons that one of these colorful birds teaches Bird Lady is about the need to allow milkweed to grow in your gardens. They're the only plant that monarch butterflies can lay their eggs on, and the caterpillars, they drink the milk from the milkweed, and that's the only thing that they can thrive on in order to, you know, live and become a butterfly after their cocoon. So, you know, we have to be aware of ways to attract the smallest of things into our garden so that we can, you know, keep ourselves alive over time.
And the herbicides kill those milkweed plants.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
A lot of people, you know, they're unsightly, and the pods grow into other plants. We were able to maintain two small patches in two of our gardens around our home, and we were thrilled to be able to see five caterpillars munching away on the leaves, and they grow very rapidly. We never were able to see the chrysalis anywhere. They kind of hide those, I guess, but we were very pleased with that, because butterflies are very important pollinators.
Now, what is a certified National Wildlife Federation habitat? How do you make that happen?
There are certain criteria that you have to prove to become certified. You have to provide them shelter, you have to provide water, you have to provide food, among other things. And our yard actually has all of those, and then some. We have a pond with waterfall raceways. We have bird feeders. We have bird baths. We've got the natural native grasses. We have the milkweed now, and we have a prairie garden. The birds are attracted to all the various types of flowers that we have that seed in the fall. So we provide the habitat for them to be attracted to, and we were then certified by National Wildlife Federation. And we have a plaque out by the end of our driveway to probably show that we are, people who really care about the environment.
Well, I would hope that more and more places became National Wildlife Federation habitats. That would be a nice goal for people.
I would, too. Definitely.
Now, what about becoming an Audubon bird and butterfly sanctuary? Is that similar with what you have to do?
Very, very similar. Very similar. They have their certain criteria that you have to provide. And you can do this, you know, via the Internet now on their website, and provide certain numbers of these criteria, and they then are able to certify you. And, again, we have a plaque for them. And we just became recently certified Monarch Way Station because of, you know, what we offer for the butterflies to also be attracted to our gardens. Our gardens surround our house, and, like I said, we have a prairie garden, and we just, you know, love being outdoors, so... We love having the habitat and the critters around us.
I'm not sure how long you've been doing this garden, but has it changed in terms of the birds and butterflies that have come to make your garden their home?
Oh, definitely. We love to sit on the front porch and observe the birds that visit our bird feeders, in a matter of a half an hour. And it's amazing the different varieties that are coming. When we bought the property and built our home, we had no trees whatsoever on the property. And we've added all sorts of trees and added, you know, for the protection, and it just attracts all different kinds of wildlife to sit back and enjoy and wonder.
So tell me about some of the birds and what they look like and what they act like. Because, you know, a lot of us don't pay any attention to our surroundings, and we don't even see many birds. I live in New York City, and most of the time I just see pigeons.
Sure. Well, we moved out to the rural area 17 years ago. We bought property, and back then, in our grasslands where homes weren't built yet, we saw a lot of meadowlarks. And those have a bright yellow and a beautiful trill to their voice. They love to be on the highest peak of the trees and sing their hearts out. I just love them. They're actually my favorite. Hmm. And then we also had bobolinks, which almost look like they had a tuxedo on. They're black and they're white. But unfortunately, with the loss of some of our grassland areas and lots that get mowed, those have disappeared almost to where I haven't seen a meadowlark very much this past several years, and I caught a glimpse of one bobolink as all this year, but they used to swarm the meadows and the grasslands. So those are two of my favorites that I don't see very often anymore, but visiting our yards, our feeders, would be the goldfinches. I love those. They're really small, bright, bright yellow. The males are very yellow, and they attract the females to their color. And during the summer months, the goldfinches are more dull. And then we have some beautiful different types of woodpeckers. We have downy woodpeckers, and we have blue jays. Cardinals in the winter are just beautiful. Those are bright red and a little more dull on the female. So we put peanuts out. Those attract the blue jays, which are, of course, they're blue, and they get very protective and scare some of the smaller birds away. But, you know, they come back as the blue jays take the peanuts we put out and carry them off somewhere else.
Now, you may not have an answer to this question, but a lot of people tell me how intelligent birds are, and I've heard so many different stories. I even have one of my own, but has anything happened with any one bird or several birds in particular that really surprised you?
Well, to start with, the two character birds in my book are very intelligent. Wouldn't you
agree? That's right.
They are the most intelligent ever. They teach Bird Lady a lot of lessons. But I guess you're right. I believe they communicate with one another within their species. In fact, I talk about that in the very beginning of my book, as Bird Lady is wondering, you know, if birds really communicate, and she comes to the conclusion they really do. You know, how else would they know to encourage their babies to start fluttering their wings and take flight? Or the bluebirds in the houses that we have, bluebird houses along the driveway, you know, first the mother comes in and keeps the eggs either warm or cool, and then all of a sudden she's ready to leave, and the father comes back and he takes his turn. You know, they communicate with one another, so they are very smart within their own species.
They are, and, you know, unfortunately, we don't want to acknowledge, we can learn so much from all of them if we just paid attention a little bit.
Absolutely, and that's why my two visiting birds in my book came back to Bird Lady and taught her several different lessons about how to be more protective of the environment in her gardening practices.
Right. Now, these two birds, Mort and Ort, I've never heard of birds like that before. And they came from Noah's Ark, apparently. How is it they've lived that long?
They did, and they disappeared quickly. But they really left Bird Lady with a lot to think about and a responsibility to share with others what they learned from them. But actually, Mort and Ort Akamort are the names of the birds. And those were names when our now 37-year-old son, Chad, was 4 years old. They were his imaginary friends' names. Now, he couldn't tell us what his friends looked like, but they were his imaginary friends' names. And I just kept them alive in my heart and wanted to, you know, have them in a book to teach children and adults alike about the lessons that they have taught Bird Lady in this book and will in the next couple of books I plan on writing as well.
That's really lovely. I love that you kept them alive.
Thank you.
Okay. Now, you know, unfortunately, many people are frustrated feeling like everything's going wrong in the world and there's not a whole lot that they can do. And especially as we get older, people get more cynical and really feel like there's nothing that they can contribute. And yet you are just so vibrant and doing so many wonderful different things. I'm just so enamored of the work that you're doing, and I want to thank you for that. So what is it that fuels you to keep going and to do good?
Well, I feel that, you know, it's not done until my life is done. I'm here to do what I'm doing. I was created to do what I'm doing, and I'm pursuing it. And I retired recently from a 43-year career in healthcare. I've been an RN for that many years. I taught the last 11 years of my career. And my goal when I retired were three things. I wanted to travel more, volunteer more, and write a children's educational book about nature. And I accomplished all three of those, actually, within the first year of retirement. And now I continue with my plans for my next two books that I have in mind. And I am a hospice volunteer, so I keep busy with that. I've been on our school board of education for 8 years already. And, you know, I take time, obviously, with my loving family, children, grandchildren, husband, immediate family, and just enjoy what we're doing until it's over. So hopefully I have plenty of years to complete all of that.
That's just terrific. And in your garden, are you growing food in addition to flowers and wildflowers?
Well, where we live, we're inundated with wildlife. Deer love to come to our pond and drink. They love to eat our flowers, and they devastate neighbors who ever have vegetable gardens. They just love that. We've got a lot of rabbits. So we gave up on our vegetable gardens probably 25 years ago. Where we live, we used to have vegetable gardens, and they did quite well. And actually, when I was young, I helped my father in our vegetable garden. And that's where I learned quite a bit of what I knew about different vegetables back then. But my important job back then was to keep pulling weeds out of the garden. So right now we have flowers in the gardens, but we don't have vegetables. The only vegetables we did have this year were pumpkins. We had three very large pumpkins. We had a lot of blossoms, but they didn't materialize into pumpkins. So we had three large ones, one for each of our grandsons.
That's great. Well, Grandma Golden, thank you so much for joining me, and it's all about food.
Thank you for giving me the opportunity. I've enjoyed
it. You're welcome. I hope many, many children read and learn from your book.
I hope so, too. Thank you so much, Karen.
Okay. Take care.
Mm-hmm, you too. Bye.
Okay. Bye-bye. So if you're interested in this book, you might look for Bird Lady Meets Mort and Ort in It's a Great Day for Pulling Weeds. It's really lovely, and the pictures are pretty, and I love the story. There you go. All right. We have a few minutes more before we'll take a little break, but I wanted to continue telling you about my travels here in the Bay Area. So some of you may know the Millennium Restaurant. I got to eat there last night, and I was just reminiscing how far we've come in the 20 years since this restaurant started. Millennium Restaurant started in 1994, and I remember when it first came on the scene. It was one of the first, if not the first, elegant vegan restaurants. And now in so many cities around the world, we have more and more of these restaurants to choose from. But how exciting it was when this restaurant came on the scene, where those of us who were vegan could actually go out for a celebratory, elegant evening and have a very lovely meal. And the food continues to surprise and excite. Everything they make there is very fresh and very creative. They tend to use many, many ingredients to create a symphony of some very, very unique flavors and sauces. And you won't find food like this anywhere else. We have the original Millennium Cookbook at home, and we've learned a lot from it because the chef, Eric Tucker, he's just a genius. And he describes how to make and marinate tempeh in Millennium Cookbook, and they offer that at the restaurant as well. But I don't think anybody makes tempeh as good as they do at the Millennium, except us at home, because we use their style of how to prepare it. So if you've ever had an opportunity to go there, good for you. But it was just really lovely to reflect on how things have improved and changed for the better in the last 20 years. And I'm so glad that they're still there. And I had the opportunity to speak to a doctor who is plant-based, and we shared a lot of stories about the medical community and how so few doctors know about nutrition. And I want you to know that in some upcoming programs, I'm going to be bringing on different doctors who are starting to become attuned in the hospital setting to nutrition. And these aren't the celebrity vegan doctors that we know about and have heard so much about. These are new and up-and-coming ones, and it's really exciting to see them on the scene. Okay. Why don't we take a quick break, and we'll be back in a few minutes with Dr. Susan Thompson, and we're going to be talking about food addiction.